they're one of my favorite bands now. So a chance to get to go see them tonight's awesome. Yeah, awesome. Nice. Well, the rare pleasures in life.
Will be played today by Leo.
You know, really, we need to add Leo as a co-host because he's now getting more screen time than Julius.
Yeah. Oh, that won't last.
You don't think that'll last?
No.
Yeah. You missed the hairstyling that Leo was doing for Terry beforehand.
It was getting coffee.
It was very, very inspired.
That's not what we're calling it. We're calling it inspired.
Well, that, or I think poor Leo just couldn't realize why, you know, Terry was long haired because he, you know, try to do a bit and then the rest of the hair would get stuck and then he'd go. And then he realized he had to groom again and it would just repeat. So he's committed to his craft, but he's not very bright.
Terry's currently having a fight with the cat. Jesus Christ. All right, folks, I hope you're enjoying this insanity.
Yes. Those of you who are watching, those of you who are hearing, you just have to imagine Terry playing with a slightly, not really chonky, but very solid tabby.
Round two, ding, ding, ding. My money is on Leo.
He's not wrong.
Yep. Guess in the mixed household, the cats always win.
We should get this train wreck started. Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Robot Society. I am Paul E. Cooley. Joining me, as always, Veronica Jaguar and Terry Mixon. I'm afraid to say what Terry's moniker is today because, well, Veronica's got her bell ready. But, yeah, so what? Anyway.
Should get one.
Yeah, you probably should get one. I'll send you one. How the hell are you two? What have you been up to?
Busy.
That doesn't sound like a complaint because, you know.
I should never, you know, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it, you know.
Success has arrived.
And that's the thing. Last year was not the best year for being booked. And so I put more effort into, you know, reaching out to people and following up a little more. And the universe said, oh, you want this? Here. So I have 6 books, 2 non-book, no, sorry, 3 non-book related, well, 3, 1 non-fiction, 1 fiction, and 1, branding, I guess.
Yeah, that works.
Gig, that would work. That's, and then I just got another audition for a larger publisher that I get to work into all of that because I get to be directed while I'm doing it. And I've never had that happen. So, so I literally have to log in and have a set time where someone is going to listen to me. Oh, Rick. Sir.
I believe she's trying to tell you, you have no idea.
Already been doing that because between books and kid schedules and travel and Terry
and cats. Well, Terry, what have you been up to?
Let's see, finished all the necessary pre-publication work on the next Last Hunter book, which comes out tomorrow. Yay! I think I'm roughly 40% done with the current novel, the first draft. Let's see, what's my percentage? Almost 45% done, so I'm almost halfway done already with, nice. With the next book. Definitely it's going to be 16 books. I don't think it's going to make 17. I don't think it's going to make 17, but I need a little bit more runway to make it land. It would feel rushed if I pushed it out to wrap up the entire series by book 15. So I think it's going to end up with 16.
16 going to be a big book then?
I don't think it's going to be any bigger than the others. It's just that I've got too many open plot threads that have to be closed off, and it would feel rushed if I tried to close them off all in two books.
Gotcha.
So I can get that done. My brain is already going, hey, that next series, let's talk about that next series because I want to write it. I am so looking forward to writing that new series. I cannot explain how draining it is.
That's got to be a big deal, leaving a world where you've known everything for 15, 16 books and diving into something new.
It's, other than writing the Empire book, which was difficult and different because I was doing it a chapter a week, it doesn't really feel like I was writing another book. It doesn't feel like I took a break.
Mm.
So, this jumping into this new series is going to be the first real step into a brand new universe, a chance to refresh my palette and write different characters. I cannot express how much I'm ready for this to happen.
The sorbet of your writing schedule.
Say it again?
The sorbet of your writing schedule.
Yes.
A palate cleanser.
Palate cleanser before he starts back in on another steak meal. That's how that works.
One wafer thin mint.
How did you avoid burnout, man?
I don't know that I really struggled with being at risk for burnout, because writing stories like this that are in a series is what I like. I like reading series and I like writing series. And it's not been a challenge to feel like I've done this before, because every time things feel stale, I shake it up. I introduce some new complication and things go on, and I'm happy with that. But 16 books is going to be a long time. It's got to be close to 3 years that I've been working on this.
Yeah, I was going to say.
By the time I'm done, it'll be right at 3 years, I think. And that's enough for that series. I will cheerfully set it aside and move on. Discussions were had about potentially a follow-on series in the same universe at some future point. And I'm going to leave the hooks to make that happen. But gosh darn, I am ready to write something that is not related to Last Hunter at all.
I'm not surprised. That would drive me nuts. I don't think I could stick with the series that long.
It's been an experience.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It's taught me a lot of things as a writer, and I'm better for it.
You silly man. You can write short.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and write some short stories for anthologies, JR, once you start paying me for the one I submitted.
Oh, damn. Just so you know, Terry, that's what happens, because when you move a certain way in your cat furniture, it does look like you're wearing a hat with a cat.
Yeah, that's right. They're all hiding back there.
Well, I finished going through Evolution, rewrote a few shitty paragraphs, shored up one plot hole that nobody noticed but me, and I think it's ready to rock. I think it's finally ready to rock. How I'm never going to get this fucking thing published, I have no idea, but we've got it. We got the text ready anyway. Rick says, not fair, Terry. I've made enough for a large mocha from JR's anthologies. How? God, man. It's getting ugly in here. Yeah. What kind of mocha? Are we talking a mocha from the local coffee shop where it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg? Or are we talking about Starbucks where they upcharge you 15% or 20% or 50%? And they'll pass on the money to their workers. Yeah, I went there. So I'm at a loss, man. I got Evolution done, and it's like, what do I do now? And there's so many freaking things to do as far as the books I have hanging out. So I started working on Neptune Scars last night, and then I went, oh, God, I don't have the strength, and decided to watch Dune instead. But I started going through Neptune Scars because that may be easier to get out than the other two black books, depending on where things go. But I want to try and put out five books this year. We've already put out one. So I got three more, two of which are black books. Well, three of which are black books, and then Neptune Scars. So maybe I can get the Soul of Beyond series going back again. So I can kick out those other two books, and then we'll have to see how it sells. But I'm curious about that, starting another sci-fi series based on how An Ancient Trap is received. Because that may drive people back to Derelict, and if I put a new book out in that, then that may drive more traffic to that, as well as people just going, okay, let's give this a shot. And Neptune Scars, I think, covers enough where you don't have to read Derelict to get the gist of what happened. And it's really the aftermath of what happens going forward. So it might be a good idea to try and get that one out. I just haven't decided yet. So I don't have any idea when the dates are for the rest of these books. No clue. It's going to be catch as catch can. So, but they're there and they're more or less ready to be either put through the crucible of rewriting or ready to more or less rock. I think Oceania is in much better shape now, but it needs to go through the same process I put Evolution through. So I'm trying to get all that done. But we're not here to talk about that.
We're not. What are we here to talk about?
Are we?
We're not here to talk about my bullshit. There's so much other bullshit going on.
Well, so, of course.
For those of you who attended 2 weeks ago when we blew up on Spotify, I'll just give a couple of updates. The Authors Guild.
Start the timer.
The Authors Guild came out, and I'm putting this in live, and said that because of the wonderful screaming we all did on social media, that Spotify had backtracked and they put out their new T's and C's because of the uproar, and that they're now our friends and everything's good and wonderful and blah, 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 and yada, 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 yada. Which I read and was kind of like, bullshit. So anyway, Christine Catherine Rush, and I'm putting this article in live, even though it's already in the regular general chat, called bullshit. It's basically the T's and C's they gave us are still worse than the T's and C's they were before. And the fact that they did this crap is typical lawyer tricks. And if you've watched T's and C's for a long time, it is. You put out something egregious so that when you put out something less egregious, people think they got something when really they didn't. And that is this particular point in case in point. There we go. That's what I'm trying to say. So I think KKR's assessment of the situation is much better and much more real than the Authors Guild. So I'm still of the mind that fuck Spotify, fuck Findaway. Get your books out. Do it now. Anyway.
Well,
but go ahead.
Something, I mean, from the narrator perspective, when it comes to Findaway, I'm not sure if they've changed it to where you have to tell them to opt your book out of machine learning. I know for a while there, we had to, if we knew that authors had their books being distributed through Findaway, narrators, we had to go through them and say, hey, could you please contact Findaway to make sure that they know to not use the books for machine learning? And it's backhanded business tactics is what it is. You must opt out of this detrimental thing because we're going to do it anyway. And I think there are better options. When you do work for hire stuff, you don't have that much control. I mean, you inherently don't have that much control over the product, but what you can try to do is in the contracts that you make with those people who are buying a service from you saying, okay, so using this, you can do A, B, C, everything but Q, and absolutely not. And that winds up being, you can't use this for machine learning. And all of my contracts moving forward have that clause in there explicitly.
I have started putting that into, I put that into the contract that, had to deal with a publisher with, and they had no problem with me adding the language that said basically this can't be used. They had no problem with that. So I think unless you're with somebody unreputable, like Spotify, find a way, you should be able to put that in any of your work and not have an issue. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story. So Audible's a different matter, or I don't know where we're going to land with that one, but that's the next thing I wanted to talk about.
Well, you know, before we dive into what else you're going into next, I had posted a link in there that two of the lawsuits against Amazon for monopolization and attempted monopolization have been allowed to proceed by the judge. Mm-hmm. So there is action on many fronts.
It's strange that this is all coming around about the same time that Brandon Sanderson put out a blog post, which was really interesting. So he said, basically, I felt the industry was taking advantage of authors because of their lack of powerful corporate interest to advocate for them. While video game creators and musicians get 70 to 88%, in fact, on two major platforms of a sale of their products in digital platform, Audible was paying as low as 25%, with the high end being 40%. I felt I could have gotten a better deal for myself, but the entire state of this industry was seriously concerning to me, so I made a difficult decision not to release the four secret projects in Audible, costing me a large number of sales, to instead try to bolster healthy competition into space. And basically what it came down to is, because of this, Audible came and basically said, let's talk about it. So he explained his side of things on our behalf, so to speak. And supposedly Audible is going to raise our royalty rates. Supposedly.
Via which channels? And to whom? Because that's it's one thing when you've got your property out there and you are the author. But if you are sharing profits with your narrator, I know I still only get 20%, you know, half of the 40% that comes from whatever books. And there are only a handful that I did way back before when they dropped it from 50% to 40%. So there are a few that I get 25% on. And there are a couple that have done really well. And so one's 26%. Ooh, because it's sold that many, you know, many units. But it's throwing out breadcrumbs. It's not solving the bigger issue.
And no, well, we don't know what this is going to look like, but I guarantee you it's not going to be as good as we would like it.
It's probably not going to cover it for the majority of people who are getting screwed over.
Probably not, but at this point, any give is something from these, from Audible.
I am not a fan of the be grateful that you get something.
I'm
not saying that you are, but it's like, it's the, well, this is like,
No, I'm still of the mind, fuck Audible and fuck Amazon. Basically, fuck them all.
I'm hopeful that these lawsuits force Amazon to change major portions of how they perform anti-competitive stuff against their authors and others in the industry. That's the only way we're going to see any real change, is if the courts slam them over the heads and tell them, yeah, these things you're doing, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Brandon also said that... Mr. Anderson also said that supposedly Audible is finally going to make their pricing less opaque for
us. Yeah, I'll really believe that.
If I don't need three spreadsheets to figure that stuff out.
Why is my book 15 and this other one's 30? What the fuck is going on here when they're the same length?
Yeah, you know, why are the sales of four units of number of Command Decisions different than four units of
any of his other books?
Yeah, paying the price.
Thank you. That I was thinking of number five, and you know why is that when they're about the same length? There's and why and the whole returns thing. You know, if it's not a one-to-one return, because I'm still getting, I'm losing pennies. It's, I forget what. Was it Hackers? Was that the one where people keep shaving the pennies off of transactions?
Yeah.
That's what happens, because you get something when you, you know, they buy something, they return it. It's very rarely an even bit. Someone is taking pennies away.
Oh, yeah.
And
Jeff Bezos' retire fund.
I'm with Terry. I'm hopeful.
Something endangered.
I'm hopeful that a lot of this stuff is going to get sorted out, or at least addressed. Now, do I think it's going to be made equitable? Fuck no, but I think it will be better than what it was. My only concern is that the next thing they're going to roll in is basically, oh, you can get 85% if you let us use your ship for machine learning.
Oh, you think they're going to give you an option?
Nope, I think they're going to opt out of it.
I think they're going to be forced to make you opt in.
Because there's been nothing ever that has been forced to opt in, because that's the way all of this should be, not just with writing. Any kind of service should be opt in, but there's no law that forces that to be that way. So it's not, and it's never going to be that way.
It will be that way only if the federales or the stateies deem it so.
Well, here's this might be a segue into what we were talking about, like the actual like topic of the show. But
we have a topic.
Somebody put a title on the damn thing. So in the one of the narrator groups that I'm in, someone had a conversation and she posted the exchange with her author's permission. But she said that her author got approached by KDP for virtual voices. And the author was like, well, F you know, and let her narrator know and said, oh, by the way, it's really weird because they were asking me about it for books that I already have contracted through an audiobook publisher. Some of the books were already done through the audiobook publisher. And granted, there is nothing that says you can't have multiple versions of a book done by different narrators, but why would you? And why is, you know, what's weird is if the rights have already been purchased by someone who's going to use flesh and blood narrators, why is KDP Virtual Voice trying to poach that? Why are they saying that's even an option?
You're thinking they actually bothered to check whether or not anybody had.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm airing. I assumed someone was intelligent. Foolish.
No, there's a difference between intelligent and diligent. That's just plain laziness, not checking. It's because they sent out basically a cattle call and wanted to see who would respond.
And I got one as well and promptly ignored it. And so did JR. JR says he got one.
Yeah. AI narrator. Fuck you.
Yeah. I'll never
agree to doing anything like that. Any of the flavors of AI, whatever they want to do, my answer will always be no. I will trust the human first.
And I have.
What?
So, Brett, you're saying you're actually a robot?
He's reading dirty stories to the AI.
Oh, that explains how twisted up his Alexa is. Got it. Now it all makes sense to me.
Oh, yes, please. Harder. Yes.
Oh, gosh. Faster, why can't we have the Mistress Alexa, you know, voice on our device?
I'm sorry, Hal. I can't do that.
Well, what we are here to talk about today is guarding your rights. And we're talking about your publishing rights. We're talking about the things that you can sell. You may not even know you can sell with your work. The basic ones are obvious. Obviously, they have the right to publish it. They have the right to market it. They have the right to distribute it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Those are the that goes to that saying, because if you don't give those three, they can't publish it, period.
Right.
So then you have audiobook rights.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have translation rights.
Then you have audiobook rights for each translation.
For each translation.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. You still got the copyright handbook.
Yes.
If you have not gotten a copy of the copyright handbook and read it and understand it, you will not know what kinds of rights you might have available to you and what any of these talks mean.
Yeah. So.
Is the back of my hair sticking up or something? Is that what he's talking
about? No.
No.
No. I'm.
Not to my knowledge.
Anyway. Shoot. What was I saying? All right. But there are a lot of rights, and we should also point out now, and we'll probably say it again, none of us are lawyers. None of us have law degrees. All of this is anecdotal evidence or stuff that we've experienced on our own or that we know via conversations with colleagues. Do not take this as solid legal advice. Research
don't
on your own.
Don't take it as weak legal advice either. Yeah. Don't take it as legal advice.
Don't take double as my mother would say, check your sources, cite your sources. And you can find people out there who are versed in IP law, who focus on rights and law related to publishing, and, you know, do your research.
Maybe we should do it this way. I gave the basic concise version of publishing rights.
Mm-hmm.
What are rights you would not give away?
Before we answer that question, remember that question.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Dean Wesley Smith talks about all the time with data, the income streams that make up your stuff, is he has a thing called the Magic Bakery. It's where you can walk in and there's all kinds of different products there that come from your one single IP.
Mm-hmm.
You have the audio, you've got the, you know, the various things, the movie rights, the every kind of little thing. And that's what he refers to it as, the Magic Bakery. And I think it's a great metaphor. And I wanted to throw that out there before your question.
Oh, no, I like that. So in a more physical sense, you know, let's take the black. That's the property that we're going to deal with right now.
Okay.
And so we've got the Black Bakery. Somewhere in Houston.
Plushies.
We can't guarantee that you won't, you know, fall over dead from eating one of the eclairs, but, you know, come on in. What are you willing? What would you have there in your bakery to sell to your patrons that you wouldn't want to have sold at the HEB?
One of the wonderful things about intellectual property is you can shave off the finest, thinnest slice of cheese that is a single right for a specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be subdivided so finally that it is unimaginable what you can sign away and do with your stuff.
So to give an example of the black, all right, let's see what I've sold thus far. I originally had the book under Severed, and for that I had sold the publishing rights, which included the ebook, trade paperback. It did not include audiobook. It did not include movie. It did not include anything but those things. Everything else was excluded. Because it wasn't there. If I didn't explicitly give away the right, they don't have it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm in a situation now where I sold the audiobook rights and somebody else is doing it. I'm essentially getting paid for doing that, for having sold the audiobook rights. I make money off that. Okay. It's not like I gave it away for free. It's not like I didn't know exactly what they were going to do. I made the decision to go with Fireside, and I'm very happy I did. They've done a bang-up job on the series. I'm very, very pleased. That is the right that I sold. Okay. It did not include interpretive dance rights.
And to be clear, you did not sell that right. You leased that right.
I leased it,
you
yeah.
licensed that right.
I licensed it, yeah.
The right is still yours because you have not gotten rid of it. It is not gone from you.
Right.
And that's an important legal distinction.
Now, the other thing is that only covered English.
Mm-hmm.
And the other right, the other license that I've sold, excuse me, is German translation of The Black. And that's
which
still
makes sense because that's the third?
It's the next biggest market other than English is the German market.
Not Spanish?
I don't believe Spanish is actually the second. I believe that German is.
I know that German is actually the second biggest audiobook market.
Mm. Interesting.
So, yeah.
Interesting. So those are the things that I have licensed. So I have been hit up for movie stuff before. It didn't go anywhere. But that would be another license that I would have to sell if I wanted to get movie stuff. I'd have to sell the license for a treatment. I'd have to sell the license for an option or whatever you want to call it in order to get the, so they could get the process moving no matter where it goes. And by licensing it, I mean getting paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There's even if there's a, you know, for options, I think it's like $5,000 or $10,000 or something like that for a movie option, depending. It's not a whole lot of money. Usually the money comes later when they actually make the damn thing. But that's another thing in the bakery to sell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sell hardcovers. I could license the rights for somebody to create hardcovers of the books.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to do that. I could license an omnibus version of The Black,
mm-hmm.
the first three books, for instance. There's all those different licensing. And of course, I could license the plushies because everybody wants a black plushie.
You could. Other stuff that you could consider, and that's also, it's genre specific, but you could license gaming rights.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so yeah, absolutely.
You could have, you know, a tabletop campaign. License right. You could have a card playing game license right. Video game rights. And then think TV about series. Your new media. You could have a web series licensing right.
Graphic novels. The manga version of The Black.
Manga version. Yeah, that's exactly yep. true. So, I mean, basically, I guess what we're saying
action
is
action figures.
Oh my gosh.
Action figure.
Wait. You could have the black perfume where it smells like rotting meat and sounds like bacon.
Yeah, let's go with that. Anyway, the point is that there's
whatever you can conceive of can be licensed.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is top tier stuff. We got to crawl before we run marathons. Yeah, we're giving examples.
Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, for people who do a lot of indie work and who wind up having a very, very dedicated fan base, think about when people do Kickstarters. Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that come up for these extended rights, they're your Kickstarter rewards. Now, if there was something if Paul decided to go and put out that hardcover set and did a Kickstarter for it, well, a one-up could be, hey, if we hit this tier of funding, then everyone gets a black plushie. Be careful. Don't put it in direct sunlight.
If he went ahead and did the tabletop role-playing game version, he could have his own dice that he does, and it would be like this. Let's see if I can get closer.
Oh, the one that says fuck me and fuck you.
Except that every single one would say fuck me. Every single side.
Mm-hmm. Oh no. Oh shit. Ow.
We're screwed.
Yeah, all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Crinkle, crackle, static.
Maybe the first 1,000 people to buy in at the top tier get your own special UV flashlight designed to keep you safe. But that's the thing. All of these different things, it's a little bit of creativity, but you can really license and put out anything.
And even
derivatives. So you talked about a sequel. You could license the rights for a sequel. You could license the rights for an anthology. You could license the rights for a Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, that'll go over well.
They don't really have Saturday morning cartoons.
Why don't we sit down and have cereal while we watch The Black?
Yeah, because it's real friendly.
That was sassy, Chris.
Or maybe a crossover for a Super Bowl performance with the Texans, and suddenly The Black comes out of the middle of... But that's the thing. It's one of those... I know, it may never happen.
J.J. Watt, eaten by The Black.
He left. It'd be C.J. Stroud, but okay. nerds.
The Black cereal turns your milk gray.
And eats your soul.
But it's not GMO. It's gluten-free. The nutritional information is all blank.
It's PETA approved.
It's PETA approved. Oh my god! It kills everything.
But okay, so but it's knowing. I mean, so part of it is when you're engaging in contracts, read the fine print.
Something to know about contracts is, if you don't think you understand it, you don't understand it. Uh-uh. It is inexpensive, relatively speaking, for an important thing like a contract, to hire a lawyer for an hour of his time to go over that contract and tell you what it says in legalese, in their plain words. And something you need to pay close attention to is indeed that fine print, because a contract can say one thing in the contract, and then the fine print can just negate everything that it just said in the main contract and change it to something completely different.
Yeah.
That has been done so many times to people.
Yeah. And when you're looking at contracts, make sure that the wording says what you are giving, like explicitly say what you are licensing or granting. Don't have it be a group of all things related to this, or just, you know, anything related to the print stuff.
Any technology that exists or may ever be invented in the future.
Exactly. Exactly.
Away from that clause.
Yeah. That's dangerous. That's just, it's dangerous and greedy, and y'all are better than that. I'm just, honestly, my take on all of this is creatives spend too much damn time and blood and sweat and tears to create something. And you owe it to yourself and what you've created to take the time to read and retain your rights.
I've had three different contracts that I've gone through, maybe four, for various things. And there has not been a single one where I have not sat down, read it, made notes to myself as I went through, highlighted parts of it, went back and read it a couple of three more times to make sure that I understood what it said, and then requested changes because certain portions of it were unacceptable to me.
That's the other part, is be willing to walk away.
Your power is the power to say no. Mm-hmm.
So if there's something that you don't like in the contract, strike it and see what they do. They may say, oh, well, we can't strike that. And your response needs to be, well, then I need more money. You know, basically you have all these rights to license, including IP agreements, which she sort of touched on earlier, which is, for instance, Paul writes a book in a series and gets it published. Well, now they have the entire right to the series, and they want to be able to make derivative works off of it without your input. That's an IP licensing agreement, essentially. And those are the kinds of things that you kind of have to make a decision on. Is that also something you're willing to walk away from, depending on how much money? Because they can totally cut you out of the process. And then, of course, there's the nothing but net rule. I will not. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
There was a few contracts. One I've been given did not sign. I asked for strikes, and they said, never mind. But it basically said that they would have full control of the IP and that I would not get paid until all expenses have been done for the series. So that means because it's net zero, they never have to give me another goddamn dime, because they can constantly complain that there's business expenses, or, hey, that went into this other derivative series, but that goes against your main book, therefore you're screwed. There's a lot of different things they can do there that is a mess.
That's like the movie industry.
Yeah, it's very much like the movie industry. Walk the fuck away unless they're offering you a mountain of cash and you just don't
get your money up front with something like that.
Get it. And even though technically an email agreement will hold up in court, get a formal contract, get everything spelled out. And that goes even if you're doing stuff between friends.
Mm-hmm. You've got to remember the advice that I was given, that I heard somewhere, that I've stuck on to, is even if you are making a deal with your best friend, your somebody that is your soulmate, people die, things get sold, write a contract as if you are going to have to deal with a person that hates you and wants to rob you blind. No matter who it is.
Yeah.
No matter who it is. Yeah. You've got to be very gimlet-eyed when it comes to contracts.
I think that's, you know, a lot of folks here probably have not worked with a publisher before. A lot of folks here probably haven't worked with an audiobook house before, and may never, because we have a lot of indies in here, and chances are most of you are planning on publishing your own work. However, these are things you need to think about and you need to know about, because there may come a time in your career where it makes more sense to farm it out to a publisher or license it to audiobooks because you're tired of dealing with it or you can't afford it on your own. And then it makes sense to sell the license to somebody who can get it together. Just like I would never try and make the movie The Black on my own. I want to sell the license to somebody to make the goddamn movie. I don't want anything to do with it once that happens, unless they call me in for creative consulting. Actually, it'd be creative insulting, but that's beside the point.
Wait a second now. Hang on. I'm going to have to make a problem with that. What makes you think your insults are all that creative?
I know. They're really not. Anyway, the point is that there's a lot of different things that you may want to do, and these are things you need to educate yourself about. And if nothing else, it will help you get some kind of idea of what's going on in the publishing industry when these people talk about these rights that people are licensing or the rights that they want. And also when Audible comes knocking on your door wanting to take these rights, or any distribution network wants to take these rights, like we have seen.
Yep.
That's not a theoretical. That is an actual concrete fact. So knowing this and knowing how the contracts work kind of helps you a little bit with the T's and C's. And it, again, it's a decision that you have to make. None of us can make it for you or want to. So that's basically the way I look at that. And those are some of the common traps that are in these contracts that people will put in. And usually they'll say, oh, it's just boilerplate. Well, then strike the goddamn boilerplate. I'm not making a contract with boilerplate. We're making a contract between us. Mm-hmm. Try again. And you have the right to do that. And like Terry said, the most power you have is you can walk away.
When I signed the contract with Podium Publishing, I had a discussion with them ahead of time of what was going to be in it. And when I got the contract, there was a little bit more in there than what was discussed. Things that were not good for me as a writer that gave them rights in excess of what I was willing to grant. And I emailed back and said, I'm not going to sign it with these things because we didn't discuss those, and you can either take them back out again or we're done. And they took them out. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that it was that they took out was they had a clause in there that if I decided not to go with them for a series, that they had 30 days to negotiate with me to try to convince me to do that. That's all fine and good. I don't mind that. But they added language that said, after that 30 days, if you go with someone else, then we have the right to come in and match their offer. And I said, we didn't discuss this. If I decide I don't want you, I don't want you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first right of refusal, or we have a, we can match the contract, is very sports movie mentality, in my humble opinion.
It's so open, too. And what it mm-hmm. means is that even though I assigned rights for one series to them, that they would be involved in everything I did going forward. Every single audio that I did going forward, they would have the right to just continually harangue me about it if I allowed something like that to go on. And I'm like, mm-hmm. no, if I decide you're done, you're done.
And that's another thing, is an escape route. Make sure you have an escape route. Or at least a plan. And that plan may be, I'm going to stop the series, stop writing the series, and wait for the license to run out.
The license, that is something you can do. The podium thing was the same as the 7-year one that Audible has.
Right.
Okay. So,
yeah.
I'm coming up on the halfway mark, you know, another long series with Chaney, and I can go ahead and start chopping podium out of my life.
Which would probably be a good thing. The bottom line is that you're listening to two of us who have all these rights. You're listening to a third one who's also done the audiobook narrator stuff, and it's also got the same kind of traps in it.
Yeah.
So basically the point is, there's a lot of really bad contracts out there, and usually it's because it is boilerplate and it's bullshit. Strike what you need to strike, and then mm-hmm. have a conversation. Don't be combative. Just have the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Be professional.
And don't there's be no afraid to ask questions.
Yeah. That too.
I know other authors that got the same offer from Podium that signed it. I'm like, I feel bad for you.
I think that, what is it? Those who marry in haste, repent in leisure.
I'm not sure that marry is the way that I heard it. It was choose in haste, repent at leisure. Or okay. act in haste, repent at leisure.
Always heard it in context of marriage.
Well, maybe that says something about the speaker.
No, it just means something about, yeah, the speaker who told me. Yeah, you're mm-hmm. right. I think I read it in a book, actually. It may have been Dolores Claiborne. Anyway, point is that you need to be kind of serious about who you're dealing with and do the due diligence. Talk to another author in their stable if possible. Mm-hmm. And see what their experience was. And if you get a lot of fuck no, stay the hell away from this, then maybe it's not the right place for you. So just be on the lookout for all of that. There's some, like, Predators and Editors is a good place to find out who's bad, mm-hmm. who's terrible.
Just because they're good now doesn't mean they won't turn bad. Hello, find a way. I'm looking at you.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah. It's basically if you sign a shitty contract and they decide to change ownership, you may be in a real, real mess.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Brett says, believed to have been adapted from the proverbial saying first expressed in print by William Congreve in 1692, remarks about the perils of marrying in haste and repenting at leisure. I was right.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
I can be right once an episode.
Sure.
I'll keep telling myself that.
And there's nothing wrong with, if you've got a contract with someone, you know, just they're post in, you know, our Facebook group, post in other, you know, author Facebook groups that you're a part of or Discord rooms or whatever. Ask people about their experiences. Because if people have a very good experience, they're happy to share. If people have a shitty experience, oh, they're happy to share and warn you away from stuff. I mean, we get that all the time as narrators. So is this a good company to work with? Is this a bad company to work with? Who should I look out for? And we listen. We watch out for our own.
Chris asks a really good question. If you make an LLC for your own publisher, should you make a contract with yourself?
I know that Dean Wesley Smith does. He has a contract between his publishing company and himself, and he has very favorable rules in these contracts for the termination of rights, i.e., either side can decide to terminate the rights at any time for any reason. I don't know how well that would stand up in law, but if, you know, somebody somehow got control of his company, he could theoretically chop off all of his assets from them instantly.
Well,
which might be fought in court, so I don't know.
Well, if, you know, if you're in a marriage and that those, you know, all rights and whatnot, that could be one thing. Or if one of your, if their LLC is among a couple people, a partner passes away and you have to manage that. I've unfortunately had more than one author pass on. And some of those books are under royalty share. They'll never get out of royalty share. But the other thing is I can't re-record them either.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes some of those projects, you know, live and learn. It might be nice to, you know, punch it up after 10, 12 years. Can't do that because I don't know who has the rights anymore.
That's an issue.
Yeah. So
if you don't have something already set up for the passing on of your rights, once you pass away, you mm-hmm. are wrong. You need to have a will. You need to have a living power of attorney. And it's not unheard of to put your works into a trust so that you can have things like, maybe it doesn't require trust, but you can have an executor, a literary executor mm-hmm. to handle your works that has some knowledge of the fact of what you do with those kind of things. But if you're not prepared for it, be advised that the valuation of your work may be radically higher than what you expect it is, because when you pass, they're looking at the remaining value of that work, which is the life of the author plus, was it 95 years?
70.
I think. 70
plus years? 70 in the U.S.
70 years? So when you die, there's 70 years worth of accrued payments and value that still have to be passed on to your heirs. So if you don't like someone, like I've got 40 plus books that I have part of, if I don't like one of my heirs, I'll just give them everything. And suddenly they've got millions of dollars worth of liability. Boom. Hi there.
That's right. Give the care of the cats to people you trust. Give your back catalog to someone you want to screw over.
Brett says, is Terry wearing a Pooh shirt in honor of Blood and Honey winning the Golden Raspberry this year?
I actually got this shirt before Blood and Honey was a thing.
Rick says, Craig Martell strongly advocates for all creatives to have an executor of your properties after you pass.
Yep.
Which means you need to figure that out before you pass.
Yeah, I know he's done videos on that. I think that was one of the 20 books topics at the conference this year, which means it is on YouTube. So if you haven't planned stuff yet, put it on your list for before the end of the year, because it is important.
I should talk to my sugar daddy to see if he's going to set up something to be a professional executor for his authors when they die.
That's going to be you.
No. He's younger than I am, so he would have to be the guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, there we go. So basically to recap, licensing, know your rights, mm-hmm. know what you're giving away. Don't ever sign a contract without really, 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 really looking at it and thinking about it.
Yes, RTFC, read the fucking contract.
You must understand it.
If you don't understand it, talk to a lawyer, and mm-hmm. it's probably worth it. So,
lawyers have reasonable fees per hour to go over things like intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
Just explaining what it is not something like negotiating it for you. So it's not nearly as price intensive as something like that. It's mm-hmm. worth the investment if you're talking about something you're going to be chained to for the rest of your life.
Yeah. So just kind of be careful on that. And then what we're also telling you is prepare to die. Should something happen to you, you need to know exactly how you're going to pass things over. JR says a subscription for LegalZoom can help you if you do this enough.
My wife has a subscription to LegalZoom for the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
We have an LLC that we haven't yet utilized, but we really should utilize it.
Let's see. Make sure it's an intellectual property entertainment lawyer.
Yes. There's a book that I'll find it. Sorry, keep going, Terry.
While it's true that you should have an intellectual property entertainment lawyer look at these things, for general contract nonsense, almost any lawyer is good enough to tell you if there's legal chicanery going on in the contract itself.
I would get an entertainment lawyer if it's a movie deal. I would get an entertainment lawyer if it's TV series, if you're talking about comic books, if you're talking about any of that stuff where it's a lot bigger than just publishing, I would definitely get an entertainment lawyer to look at that, because you're talking about residuals. You're talking about all sorts of crazy shit that happens through that mess, because that is a miasma maze, which is why they have people who are specifically trained to deal with that and know all the chicanery that can go on, and they will be your pit bull. Rick says, Terry, the royalties you're getting from your sugar daddy, they would be taxed differently if paid to your LLC.
I think that's probably true. I think it would be the corporate tax rate. And I'm just nervous about, you know, getting myself and my intellectual property involved in a company to begin with. It sounds needlessly complicated for me, but it's probably something I should learn more about.
So I posted a link in Discord, but way a while ago, I had a good friend of mine at the university introduced me to one of his friends who used to work at Full Sail University. And her background, she was an entertainment lawyer. And I sat down with her and I had a bunch of questions about when I started to work with the writing team and the contract with TradPub. And for the record, I paid her a small amount. She almost didn't want me to pay her. But I brought 3 batches of chocolate chip cookies and that was good. So sometimes it's not money, but you should always value someone's time. She recommended this book. It's The Permission Seeker's Guide Through the Legal Jungle. Obviously it's been redone since she recommended it to me. So this edition is 2017, but this might be another good book to have in your arsenal. In addition to the NOLO one that Terry recommended. I know I've got one of the other NOLOs. I think it's the entrepreneur one. So the business and taxes, that's a very good series to have at your disposal. But if, you know, kind of a side thing, if you're running your writing like a business, educate yourself on business practices and legal practices. Keep those resources at hand so you can refer to them.
I think that pretty much covers everything.
Does it?
It covers everything I wanted to discuss today.
Oh, we stayed on topic?
We did.
No.
We did. We stayed on topic for 40 minutes. It's amazing. It's like a new record for us.
Damn. What do you do now?
Pretty sad. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm pretty sure chat doesn't have any good questions. They only have snark.
And innuendo. Don't forget the innuendo.
Although they have had some good points today. Thank you, chat. You get plus one chat points today.
Wait a minute. There are chat points?
I'm going to institute a new rule here. We're going to institute a new rule where chat gets points for being right.
Oh, that's not going to happen very often.
Yeah, they're currently at minus infinity just because of J.R. Hanley.
Ho-ho!
J.R. says, Terry, what are your plans after the next Sugar Daddy series?
Are you kidding me?
That's 16 books away.
Are you kidding me? I've got, what, another 2.5 books to write in the current series, and then I've got 15-ish to write in the next series? Yeah, I don't look that far in the future. I have no clue. Maybe I'll write a series about how, you know, the heroes of the galaxy are having to exterminate this absolute plethora of JR clones that are attempting to cause mayhem and havoc throughout the known world, known universe.
On that note, if you have a question or comment on this show, you can send an email to show@debrobotsociety.com. You can find me on Mastodon at @Paul_E_Cooley at VYRSE.social. You can find us on Facebook at the Deb Robot Society writing community, where we mangle all the madness. You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/DRS podcast, where we are live every Saturday at 3 p.m. CST. Like and subscribe so you always know when we're live. And if you want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/DRS podcast and buymeacoffee.com/DRS podcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to warm leatherettes and spanking. That's what we're going with today.
I see.
I also have a tendency to, you know, lie. And at $10 level, you get your names read. And our $10 patrons are Nate Cosby, Antoine Batts, Tony L. Joy, Rick Shaw, Lisa Slack, Isabel Cushy, and Tim Niederreiter. Thank you to all of our patrons for making this show possible. And with that, wow, I got through that without a single flub, I think. That's amazing.
We stayed on topic and you got through that without messing up?
No, I didn't.
What the hell?
I don't know. It's professional or something. Must be all the coffee I've had today. Can you see my eyes? It's twitching. With that, we are out of here. Enjoy your Saturday. Thanks for hanging out with us and spending time and for some of the great comments that didn't come from JR, because we all know those are terrible. With that, we are out of here. We'll see you patrons in 9 minutes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.